the Missile Defense Advocacy Alliance. Ricky's been involved in this arena of missile defense since 1980, where he was introduced through the Governor Ronald Reagan to Dr. William R. Van Cleve. And since its founding, the organization has grown to 14,000 members across the world and has emerged as one of the top experts in this field. More interestingly, Ricky was a Super Bowl winner twice, I believe, or three times with the Oakland Raiders. I hate to say the Oakland Raiders, as a linebacker in the NFL. So pretty unique. I don't think many missile defenders have that.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here. I got an opportunity to talk about air defense. I never get that. I'm always on missile defense, so this is really good to be able to express that. As we all know, I think, that if they don't score, they don't win. And the best defense wins, and it goes across the board. And what was very powerful this Monday by the Secretary of Defense in Minot Air Base, where our ICBM force is there and where our Chinook nuclear bombers are there, made comments of bringing forward the defensive part of the team under an umbrella of deterrent. And that was significant by merging that from our Secretary of Defense. I have not heard that in 8 years, and I think that is positioning for that going into the next president's, whoever will that be, on that. But I'd like to just read one quote from him on Monday that he stated. He said, "Today, it is a sobering fact that the most likely use of nuclear weapons is not the massive nuclear exchange of the classic Cold War type, but rather the unwise resort to smaller, but still unprecedentedly terrible attacks, for example, by Russia or North Korea, to try to coerce a conventional superior opponent to back off or abandon an ally during a crisis. We cannot allow that to happen, which is why we are working with our allies in both regions to innovate and operate in new ways that sustain, deterrent, and continue to preserve strategic stability." So this is a very strong statement, and bringing forward air defense is one of those possibilities in that theater and in both theaters to be able to bring that strategic deterrent as part of that. This year, so you're going to get a layman's viewpoint from me. I've been to 8 countries this year with 8 different governments, with the Air Force, the Army, and the Navy, 3 in CENTCOM, 3 in PAYCOM, 3 in UCOM, and of course, NORTHCOM. We've held 10 partnership, allied partnership capacity of relationship events with 16 different countries. And I just come back from GCC, where we brought the GCC countries together last week in Abu Dhabi, been over in Japan. But today, the history of our air defense, and I'm going to take it back to 2003, where our low point of air defense was, when the Secretary of Defense and under Vice Chairman Pete Corelli cut the complete Avenger to force from our maneuvering force. In the early 80s, or in the mid-80s, we had SHORAD battalions, which are Stinger units on Avengers, and we had one for every single division that we had. So we had 12 battalions that were assigned, about 60 batteries of Avengers to protect the maneuvering force. One battery for every combat brigade team. Today, we don't have a battery assigned to any division. We don't have air defense for our maneuvering air forces. We only have, we kept two Avenger battalions, one up at Fort Lewis 5-5, and one at Kentucky at Fort Campbell, the 244, I believe. Those two Avenger battalions have been turned into CRAM battalions. The one, with one exception of one battery out of Fort Lewis that is in North, that is in Korea today, doing UAS defense in the DMZ zones with that. The Patriot system, which was obviously an air defense system when it, before it evolved into a missile defense system, is a point of defense system. It is a non-mobile system that can go with the armored divisions. So we have a big issue here. We've got a culture in the Army where it's run really from the combat division, infantry, armor, aviation, and they're the powerhouse of the Army. And we've got their defense branch that used to be part of that, but was split, and now our air defense units are protecting mostly U.S. Air Force bases around the world and don't have the affiliation with the Army and have a strategic mission that is separate from the combat brigade team's aspect of it. So there's a dysfunctionality with that. It's kind of their stepchild on that aspect of it. And Big Army, because of the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, because of the amount of money that we needed, cut the force structure and made a decision to take out an ability to defend the armored divisions in 2003 so they could save money and put money into the precision and into the special forces, etc. on that. So it wasn't really about promise of Air Force, I mean, air superiority. We had that, but it was more of a budget position and a cultural difference within the Army on this. So today, go to the next slide, and you're well aware of the threats that we have in the world. And I think we all recognize that Russia is the most dangerous threat in the near term to the stability and status quo of the world and certainly of Europe. Now, they've used the Ukraine war to show us six or seven layers of UAS capability for surveillance targeting. They have demonstrated live firings of their newest modernization systems on cruise missiles from platforms, Caspian Sea, on ship, on submarine, on plane, multiple shots at the same time, 360. And you've got a leader that's not in for the long run. And he's pressing. And we don't have an ability to defend our maneuvering forces in Europe today. There's none there. China is a long-term position and a long-term threat, not an immediate threat today, but they obviously close to 2,000 short medium-range missiles, A2AD, and have some of that UAS capability that they have on it. And I think everybody else is down a ways. So what's happened over the last 10 years or 15 years, we've spent all our money on fighting two wars. Russia has spent their money on modernizing their forces, both nuclear and the capabilities that we're seeing today. So we have a gap. And I think it's going to be 4 or 5 years before you guys create a solution for that gap in the Army Maneuvering Force Protection. The gap is not prevalent as much with our Navy, because our Navy has the best platform in the world to do integrated air missile defense, and that's the Aegis platform. And they are ahead of it, and they have developed probably the best interceptor to do multiple missions, the SM-6, that can do and will shoot down the DF-21, which we'll demonstrate in December out of PRMF to do that. So today, you go, hang on one minute. So there are really two types of defense here. There's point defense, and you have maneuvering force defense. Point defense, say in Europe, is about protecting your logistics and your support to fight and protecting your airports, your ports, so you can sustain a long fight if you have to fight. And that those defenses are a little bit more difficult because you really only have to, there's usually a single point of failure in each one of those ports. If you hit a certain runway, you take it out. So it's challenging to do it. It's very interesting that none of the European logistical sites have any air defense on them today. Well, we go into CENTCOM, we have 16 Patriot launchers on each of those two bases. And you go to Korea, you have that capability out. Yet we don't have anything in point defense in Europe today. That's a capacity issue for point defense more than it is a capability aspect for it. On the maneuvering force is a little bit more evasive and spreads over miles. So you need to be able to it takes more offense to take down a maneuvering force than you would on a point defense force. So those are the two things that we as a community need to be able to put forward solutions to on both those types of systems. So next slide. So what do we have in the field today? So let's start off with our best system in the field today is the Aegis platform. The Aegis platform, obviously designed to protect the carriers, designed to protect mobile, designed to protect the fleet. It has several layers of capability. And we're not going to talk about the SM-3, which is space ballistic missile defense, but it has the SM-6, which can hit maneuvering targets, which can do theater ballistic missile defense in altitude, and it can offensively strike on that ship. Behind that are the SM-2s, explosive ordnance device. Then you have the Sea Sparrow. Then you have the Sea Whiz. And you have multiple layers that you can protect your ship and you can protect the region around it. It is, like I said, the best for mobility that we have. And if we need something in Europe right now, the best thing would be to put those ships in the Baltic Sea to extend some ranges of access and denial in that direction for that. And we do also, because that is the best integrated air and missile defense system deployed, we put these on land, as you know. So we have one operational today in Romania, and we have one coming in Poland. But those systems are not allowed to have air defense capabilities. And so they're only allowed to have the SM-3 capability on those systems. Yet they have the engineering capability, software, all of that to amp up, to protect themselves, and certainly with Baseline 9 and NIFCA, can engage and launch off a remote, which means if you had elevated sensors like A2D2s or the J-Lens, for instance, you would be able to have an A2 AD defense into the Baltic states from the site in Poland. As a real-time capability, that can be done pretty easily. Japan is obviously looking and most likely will buy Aegis Ashore sites. But Japan is not going to buy them with SM3 only capability. So those sites have to be tested with SM6s in them, with SM2s in them, on PRMF in Hawaii, which we have one to do that. They will not buy them without doing that. And I think we all know that our administration and our government has made a promise to Russia that those are only going to be SM-3 capabilities and they don't have any terminal missile defense capability for ICBMs, and they're not going to arm them up. So there's going to need to be some courage here if we have to go in that direction to be able to lead and change that kind of capability, which is already existent in theater. The Marines today have Stingers. So the Marine Expeditionary Forces, when they land, they go in and take airstrips. So they're using Stingers. But remember, the Stingers is 1970 technology. Most of those things are wore out. The production is stopped. But they have a capability just to secure an airstrip for their aspects of it. We got the Air Force, who's got ARAMs, and they can fly them on the 35s, the 22s, but we've shrunk our Air Force, and they have many more missions to do than to do cruise missile defense off of that capability. We would be very lucky to count on that capability. So that leaves you with the Army today. And the Army, as I said earlier, has Patriot 2s and Patriot 3s in a non-mobile position that can do defense against cruise missiles, but they have to be in a location to do that. The U.S. has one battalion in Europe, four batteries, and that's it. The Patriot radars and Sentinel radars that we use with our Avengers also can be put to use. Now, like I said, we only have one Avenger battery in Korea. We have seven of them in the National Guard. But the seven in the National Guard are on a rotation to protect this region right here, the National Capital Region. And they are rotating in here, seven batteries with NASAMs sitting right over there on Fort Washington and Stinger missiles close by the White House to protect four or five assets that are here. And that's all the Army has to throw down now. We've got our NATO partners in Europe that have their own national air defense capabilities. Old systems, Hawk, SAMP-T. We have some Russian systems with Romania and Poland, I think, with S-100s. But they're a national resource. They're not going to want to give those things to the pool for the protection, I don't think, of NATO. They want them there. But we have an opportunity to somehow integrate and be interoperable with those existing capabilities that are there. And I know our IBCS is not out yet, but there is the German system, which I think is made to be able to interoperable other foreign countries' aspects to that. And I would also say to you that just like the Aegis is the best integrated air missile defense system, the best point defense system in the world today is in Israel. because that's, they've developed it with $1.7 billion of our tax dollars, and they have a layered, effective missile defense, I mean, air defense system that's with the Iron Dome and now the David Sling that'll come out. So we've got an investment there, and that is another capability that could be brought to the theater, to the U.S., if we want to put that in play. So those are the, that's the reality. Next slide. So leadership. Leadership, great leadership, is about the courage to make the right decision at the right time, for the right reasons, under extreme pressure. And to solve this problem, you have to increase the force structure. You have to increase the force structure. That's significant. And you have to fund the resources to do so. I've had an opportunity to meet with the National Security Council. Both the candidates' policy have came and met with me on briefings to understand the issue a little bit better. I can tell you that the current president is not going to move on this problem. And I think Ash Carter is setting the pace a little bit in messaging on getting this thing lined up. I am optimistic that Hillary will be much more tougher on the Russians than when she and Michelle Flournoy came in and did the reset to Russia strategy. And I think the next president is going to have to put something in the field to shut down or to send that strategic message to Putin, and air defense and missile defense as a group can do that. Trump's people are pretty naive on the issue. They're not as experienced as Hillary's people on the intricacies of the issue on that. Both of them are looking not at raising the DOD budget, but to come in and get the funding from within the Pentagon, cutting inside the Pentagon for some of the bureaucracy that's in there. So I don't believe we're good enough or strong enough from a SecDef level and even Secretary of Army, Secretary of Defense to make this gesture to change force structure, to build a new air defense system to go along with our maneuvering forces and increase capacity without the president being part of this and leading this. And we're in an opportunity where this is only going to happen. We have to wait another 4 years for a new president, or maybe another 8 years for another president to make that happen. So it's a critical time. It's a critical time to air this issue out, to get their buy-in for that system. So the next slide. So I think there are two sets of solutions. There's a current solution between now and 4 or 5 years from now, and then it's a long-term solution. So the very best solution for right now is electronic attack. And we have that capability. We're developing it. It can be put in field with a receiver and transmitter, and we can shoot unlimited. And that's about jamming. And this is a UAS position, but that has to go in. That is the best thing we can do in putting that out in the field. I think the next thing is getting the ability to see it. So getting our link up with our surveillance and getting overhead surveillance in place and connected with the allies, especially around the Baltics and to do that. Aegis Ashore can be turned on. It can be turned on with a political move, a strong movement to do that. I think on point defense, we have to increase the capacity of that. And I think Randy McIntyre, who's the schoolhouse general for SIL, is looking at maybe putting a IFPC and a CRAM and a Avenger possibly, whatever that MLO, whatever that's going to be, on each one of his battalions. So we don't have to create a whole new force. We could have these air defense battalions put in with the current Patriot, 15 Patriot battalions to wield that. And I think we've got our partners here that have tremendous capability. I think Poland is the lead dog in creating air defense. They are on the front lines, and as you see, they are looking to get the best air defense in. But again, they're more point defense than they are maneuvering a force in play. I think you got to, again, look at David Slang, and you got to see if it can be applied on our Patriots to be able to do some of the stuff that we can do that we can't do now. On our long-term solutions, you look at the powder gun, you look at the rail gun for point defense capabilities, and you've got to look at the solid-state lightweight laser that can be on a truck or on a Reaper that can do some of that. We got to invest in that, and I think if we get the electronic attack great enough that it can just pick up the leakers is what we would want to be. But I think a sizable investment needs to be done in that aspect of it. But again, I would say the next president has the ability and should have the ability to change the course of where we are to be able to protect the maneuvering force. If you can't protect the maneuver, if you can't protect your combat brigade team today, anywhere in the world, you're ineffective in implementing defense policy with your military. And I'm also would clearly state that this is not a military solution. I mean, we got to do more than a military solution to deal with Russia. So that's my presentation. Any questions? Thank you. Oh, sorry. Fran?
With your engagement with the two primary candidates or their party, your representation, any indication to me from them on where they're going to go with defense? Increase in budget?
I think it's more
looking. Status quo, the famous, we're going to cut the fat and find the efficiencies and.
But from what I heard, the Tea Party right is on the Trump position of not, they're not going to throw big money like a Reagan, what people think, believe that he's going to be like Reagan and throw money. They're not going to do that. They're both looking at cutting costs within the Pentagon, serious costs, and making choices on it. That's what, on both accounts, in different ways. I think the Clinton is looking at the effectiveness of the aircraft carrier because it's putting warheads on foreheads, and now you reduce that amount that you can do, yet the defensive costs for a carrier are tremendous. So those are some of the discussions that they were looking at. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for your time.